Medicine. He's been active in the field of Chinese medicine since 1980, teaching and publishing in professional journals. Lobby holds a master's degree in both acupuncture and neurobiology. That's 2 degrees. A lot of work. He's a founding board member of the Acupuncture Society of Massachusetts, and in 1993 he was elected as a fellow of the National Academy of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. Lonnie, in addition to being a prolific writer, maintains a full-time practice of acupuncture and herbal medicine in the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Please welcome Lonnie Jarrett.
Thank you, Jack.
Hello, everyone. How are you? It's an honor to be here, and as ever, I thank Jack and the college for bringing me out. It's great to see so many people together. I feel a little nervous about giving this talk. And I've kind of checked in with myself because usually I'm not nervous at all. I've been doing this forever. And it's not really because I'm self-conscious about how I might look doing it. It's because I care so much about it that I'm afraid I might not convey it with due diligence. I'm afraid I might not transmit what I think is really the most important thing that can be said about Chinese medicine. So at the outset, let me say that I went into Chinese medicine for only one reason, and that was to change the world. I remember when they announced we're going to start the clinical part of our training, and I said, oh yeah, I'm going to be putting needles into people. I never thought about it for a second. My only goal, when I first received the transmission of Chinese medicine from my first teacher, and I realized that's what I was going to be doing the rest of my life, and let me say, I'd like to announce that I will never be retiring. I will be giving to this medicine till the day I die, if I live to be 150. So, when I speak about medicine, I'm only speaking from a spiritual perspective. There are other perspectives, and they're valid. But as a basis for understanding who we are as human beings, as an expression of a universal process that's taken 15 billion years, as far as we know up to this moment, everything comes out of knowing who and what you are, wouldn't you agree? That if you don't know who you are, and you don't know what you are, and you don't know why you're here, you can't possibly have a perspective on anything else that would come after that. And who we are is we are vehicles for the emergence of spirit, divinity, consciousness into this world. Now that's an impersonal phenomenon. It has nothing to do with any of us as individuals. It's just simply the truth about all of us. And I think it's acknowledging this common truth and having fidelity to it as the basis for our relationship that really brings us together in a common and united purpose. So when I'm speaking about medicine, it's from a spiritual perspective. There are other perspectives. They're valid. They're important. But they cannot serve as the foundation for understanding the meaning of a life. So spirit is primary. So I'm speaking from a spiritual perspective, and the teaching that I'm giving today, the teaching that I'm trying to transmit today, is for a very specific part and segment of the human population. It's for world-centric, holistic, integral thinkers. It is not for George Bush. It is not for the Al-Qaeda. It is not for the Kalahari Bushmen. And my apologies in mentioning them in the same breath. It is for world-centric, holistic, integral thinkers who represent maybe 10% of the human race. But I'm quite convinced it means everybody who's in this room right now. I'm quite convinced of that. Learning to read Chinese, if you're interested in it, is good. But it's not imperative. Why? Because on the one hand, there is no truth that the greatest minds in the history of our medicine have been awakened to that is not within the God-given capacity of every man and woman in this room if they exercise the proper care and respect to the highest and deepest part of themselves. And two, so we're just talking about priorities here. We're just talking about priorities. And two, thinking that what they're doing in China today would be the greatest source of the true heart of the medicine would be like drawing the conclusion, if you want to know how to make a good automobile, go to Detroit. Well, tell that to the Germans and the Italians, please. If you want to make a good movie, go to Hollywood. I don't think so. So what does it mean on the one hand to honor lineage, honor the classics, have respect for our origins, and on the other hand to take full responsibility for who and what we are, for the educations that we've had? I'm going to try to talk about something today which is impossibly difficult. I'm going to try to talk about enlightenment as a living reality for every human being, how that's present in our medicine, and how medicine can be of service to that in people who are interested in that. So what does enlightenment really mean today in the 21st century, devoid of all the myth and superstition of past levels of development? Well, there are two things that it really means to holistic integral thinkers. One, it means losing cynicism. That means one has to drop the cynicism about becoming enlightened in this lifetime, right now. Nothing's in the way, there's no excuses. We've had it better than any people who've ever lived, folks. The pharaohs didn't have the number of options we have sitting in this room right now. The kings and queens of antiquity, the emperors in China, couldn't sit there and say, what do you want tonight, northern or southern Indian for dinner? Which of the 50 sushi bars should we go to? What movie do you want to see? Apparently, according to Ted, they did get to decide what gender they slept with. But by the time you're my age, that's not that exciting anymore. So it means losing our cynicism, taking full responsibility for realizing that the highest that the masters of antiquity have pointed to in terms of enlightenment from all traditions is a human capability that's finally here, ready and waiting for our attention. It's just a question of what we care about. There's nothing in the way. And it also means, and this is the hardest thing for world-centric and holistic thinkers, integral thinkers, holistic thinkers, it means that we have to have our attention placed on a picture that's much bigger than ourselves, much bigger than our own thoughts and feelings. Now, in terms of killing cynicism, did Barack not accomplish this for us? Could we not have had a more powerful affront to all the cynicism and doubt we've been hanging our heads about since RFK got shot, I believe, just a few miles from here, 40 years ago? Right? San Diego, wasn't it, out on the beach here? No, RFK was Dallas. JFK was Dallas. RFK was in a hotel just up the beach, right? LA? Was it LA for sure? Okay, it's still just up the beach, as the gentleman says. I mean, you know, Wasilla's just up the beach too, but... I guess I should stick to talking about deeper things, right? So we need to lose our cynicism. We have a lot to be happy about. We're the most educated, the most privileged people who've ever lived under the highest form of government to have evolved on the planet despite all its problems. We've had the most religious freedom, social freedom, economic freedom, political freedom, the best nutrition of any human beings who've ever lived. So it's time, my friends, to stop spending another minute trying to get over our own pasts. You see, the very worst part of us, the wounded, traumatized, victimized inner child, you remember the inner child? That's the part of us that intends to spend the rest of this incarnation and the rest of all our incarnations healing from what's already happened to it. And the best part of ourselves already doesn't have a problem. It's ready to go. Right? It's out at the curbs. Its bags are in the taxi. The taxi guy's pushing the horn saying, let's create the future. Let's create the future. And we're sitting inside going, but you don't understand how hard it's been. So why is it that the most fortunate people who've ever lived are the ones taking all the Prozac? Getting all the psychotherapy? It doesn't work, folks, not from a spiritual perspective. It's all just a way of taking time. The big question is, what does it take to turn a seeker into a finder? What does it take to turn a seeker into a finder? Now, if a person's been a seeker for 10 years, you'd say, boy, that person's really serious. And if they've been a seeker for 20 years, you would say, they're not giving up. Look at that. But by the time a person's a seeker for 30 years, you have to start getting suspicious. And by the time a person's a seeker for 40 years, you can have no doubt that they just enjoy seeking. That they have no intention of ever, pardon me, but climbing out of the sewer, turning their back to it, and walking away from it forever. This has a lot to do with enlightenment. It has a lot to do with... Enlightenment just means waking up to the part of ourselves that has never been wounded, traumatized, or victimized, doesn't need any time to heal, it can't relate to the fears and desires of the ego. So fears and desires, that's the heart-kidney axis. I had to put that in because it was in the title of the talk. what I'll be lecturing about this afternoon. So, what does enlightenment mean in the 21st century? Drop the cynicism, drop the doubt, take responsibility for it. We all have flashes, don't we, of higher possibilities? We've just become consumers of spiritual experience. Okay, the wounded, traumatized part of ourself has now had 100 years of psychotherapy, tantric sex, it's taken ayahuasca in the rainforests with the shaman, it's been out to 10,000 waves in Santa Fe and Eslin, it's taken LSD, it's heard the Beatles, if it was very lucky it got to see Jimi Hendrix, and I still need more time. What do you need it for? To overcome my past. You'd think that we were all born in Darfur. Right? Wouldn't you? Any person who can afford $50 a week for an acupuncture session is in the top 15% of humanity alive today. Right? So we've got to get our attention on something greater than ourselves. Now, enlightenment has traditionally meant waking up to the recognition that there's only one. Not many, but one. So Jesus said, the Father and I are one. And in Chan Buddhism, the recognition of one. Chan means one, awakening to the one. Right? Awakening to the one. Not two, one. Not two, one. Chinese medicine, my friends, it's beautiful to see you all, is a science of integrity. It's the science of how things come apart and how to restore integrity. Now, the simple truth is, it's not likely in our lifetime, and it has never been done in the past, that integrity is going to be reached at the level of the flesh. Right? The body is a vehicle. It's just a tool for the evolution of something else. It's a vessel that consciousness has been evolving through. Matter has been a vessel for 15 billion years for the awakening of consciousness. So why has Chinese medicine lasted so long? Because it's been able to help every generation face the challenges that confront it. So what are the nature of the challenges that face us today? Up until the mid-1800s, the challenges that faced us were all external to us. Up until the mid-1800s, God was running the universe. God was doing it. Whether you lived or died depend on the weather. Could you find shelter? Was there enough rain? Was it dry at the right time? Was it too damp? Was it too hot? Was it too cold? And therefore, the external syndrome patterns were prevalent in Chinese medicine. But with the discovery of evolution in the mid-1800s, congruent with the Industrial Revolution, the rising of technology, in the developed world, we started controlling those things. Nobody where I live dies of exposure. And does anyone die of exposure here? I mean, probably not, right? So, as the survival needs of humanity were met at the leading edge, only at the leading edge, 85% of the world isn't where I'm talking about. But as the survival needs of humanity were met, the cause of illness shifted from external pathogens to people suffocating in their own minds. And I'm not just talking about the people sitting on either side of you. Right? Have you noticed that the causes are internal? The main causes are internal. So what we need to do is help people get their attention off themselves. Right? I remember about 2 years ago I had a patient come in and she was in tears. I said, "What's wrong?" She said, "My brother just got a terminal diagnosis of cancer." And I said, "I'm so sorry." She said, "You cannot imagine how much work this is going to be for me." And we talked a little bit. She said, "Well, what do you think?" And I said, "You don't want to know." She said, "Yes, I do." I said, "Believe me, you don't." She said, "No, I really do." I said, I think you're really quite narcissistic." But as dramatic as that example is, none of us in this room, including myself, are any different when push comes to shove and when we're under stress. So when everything's going well, it's very easy to find a lot of room in our hearts for other people and to be convinced life is positive. And when things aren't going well, we leave plenty of room for ourselves to go crazy, don't we? So all of New Age medicine, and I include Chinese medicine in that, the part of Chinese medicine that has even made it to New Age medicine, because a lot of it's still stuck back in Confucianism. The whole thing really has been about controlling our experience, isn't it? Do you get the idea that some of our patients, you know, I mean, just look at ourselves. "I'm feeling a little tired today. I'll take some Buzhang Yiqitang. Oh, I'm feeling a little tense. I'll take some Xiaoyuan. Could you move the needle a little to the left? That point you did between my eyes last week was just great." Don't you get the idea that our patients would love a hot bath with a morphine cognac drip? People of their specific, whatever gender and size and shape they happen to like, attending to them in every way, with a little bell to ring. And get, "I'm feeling something. Could you increase the ginseng in my drip, please? I'm having an emotion. So something must be terribly wrong." It is laughable. It's funny. It's true. And it's the single largest cause of stagnation on the planet. When the leading edge is all caught up in its own healing, not taking responsibility for facing the tough challenges, the sacrifices. So traditionally, enlightenment has meant perceiving the one, but to perceive the one, a price has to be paid. And that price is you can't be there. Right? Because if you're there, then there's two. So you can't be in the picture. And what part of you can't be in the picture? Your fears, your desires. It's my life. No one can judge me. Really? It's not what the Old Testament says, right? It's not what the New Testament says. And anyway, even though I don't know those books well, it sure as hell isn't what I'm saying. So, Chinese medicine is a science of integrity. How are things coming apart? How do we put them together? At the level of the body, things are going to come apart. It's just matter. It's just a vehicle. But we're not victims of our constitutional types. We're not victims of our astrological signs. We're not victims of our life circumstances. At the level of consciousness, my friends, there's nothing wrong. It's never entered the stream of becoming. It doesn't self-reference. And its only motivation is to create a more wholesome future right now with no excuses. Rosa Parks didn't get on a bus in Selma, Alabama or Birmingham, wherever that was. She didn't get on the bus and say, boy, this is so unfair, I think I'll get a law degree and try to change things. There was no gap between her perception of what was right and action. No gap between her perception of what was right and acting to create that future now, regardless of the personal cost she had to pay. What we do with Chinese medicine, our orientation toward our patients and our orientation as patients is, I need to do treatment to get to a point where I feel like doing what I already know is the right thing to do. See? I need to get to a point where I feel like doing the right thing. There's a word for a person who waits to feel good about doing what's right. There are a few words, but narcissist would pretty much. Last time I was in California at the symposium, I talked about narcissism. It didn't go over well. It occurred to me on the flight home, you should never talk about narcissism in California. But like everyone, I'm slow in learning from my mistakes, and I'm hopeful. Things have come far. Haven't they come far in the last 4 or 5 years? It's a new world, folks. But you think Barack's going to do it all? No? We're going to have to do it, right? We're going to have to stay just as engaged. We're going to have to take the world back, right? So, I wouldn't say, I'm idealistic, but I'm also very practical. And my interest in practicing medicine is using it as a vehicle for bringing heaven to earth. I actually believe we can create a cultural revolution in the world using Chinese medicine as a vehicle. Why? Because the practitioners of the medicine are the leading edge thinkers on the face of the planet. How many people do you think can think holistically and integrally on the planet? Not that many. Not that many have a holistic integral value system based on systems theory and the appreciation, at least in theory, of the recognition of oneness. But the real recognition that when I look in your eyes and you look in mine and we look in each other's eyes, that it's just one thing looking at itself, right? When we look through the Hubble telescope, what's going on? What is the Hubble telescope? What's going on? Let's see. There was a 14 to 15 billion year developmental process where one form of matter took another form of matter and is able to look at the entire cosmic dimension of the universe and realize deep time development. What's looking through the telescope and what's being seen on the other side of it is the same thing. That's why when we look at those pictures, we feel awe and we feel a pull and we feel a recognition, a curious recognition of self in the pull toward that beauty and that light that we're seeing out in the universe. That's where we came from. That's the source. That's the origin. That's the one. So, So if Chinese medicine is a science of integrity, what's the implication? We tend to orient toward our medicine as if we treat a person enough, they'll eventually come to the point of being balanced, and that balance will eventually show in their behavior. It's looking through the wrong end of the telescope. You can treat and treat and treat a person. You can give a person LSD. My evidence is a person can come face to face with God, fall to their knees in humility, renounce all the karma they've made in the past, see through their entire life, and 2 weeks later turn their back on it completely because they'd rather spend the rest of their lives in the sewer. So there are three levels of struggle that I teach. There are three levels of struggle. The first level, the person's in the sewer, rolling around in you-know-what, with their own egos. They're completely divided in their intention. There's a higher self, there's a lower self, and they're in the sewer rolling in you-know-what. And the ego, that's where it wants to keep us, in the sewer, rolling around. And you stand outside the sewer and you say, you know, you might want to come out of there. The person says, can't you see I'm busy? I'm engaged in spiritual practice. I'm taking myself on. I say, well, could you come out soon? It's not up to me. I'll be out when God is ready for me to be out of the sewer. It's really foul down there. Come out. They say, look, I'm busy. Okay. So finally a person, the Tao Te Ching says the sage is not sick because the sage is sick of being sick. So finally the person comes out of the sewer and you clean him off. They go, God, it's incredible out here. Then the next level of struggle begins, which is now they have to come face to face with every part of themselves that loves being in the sewer. That would rather be in the sewer. Have you ever noticed that with your patients? That you've helped bring them through something incredible, and it can happen very quickly, and they come and say, my God, I have my old self back. I feel fantastic. Thank you very much. My friends, higher state experiences don't change people. Not postmodern people who have no conscience, who just want to consume experience but never live up to it. So when a person is out of the sewer, there should be an obligation to never go back. A person's going to have to face every part of themselves that really was happy being miserable. What I've discovered in my clinical practice is that as much as people protest about their suffering, when it really comes to staring into light and going blind, really being happy, really paying the price for being a vehicle for the evolution of light, positivity, hope in the world, very few people are interested. So the next level of struggle is once we're out of the sewer, taking on that part of ourself that wants to go back and saying, I won't do it. Before one gets out, the greatest fear one has is of getting out. And if one has conscience, which implies morality, which implies the ability to make judgments about one's own behavior, God forbid, and to choose between the highest and the lowest parts of ourselves, to make a clear choice between the highest and the lowest parts, a person with awakened conscience just isn't going to go back. I know I didn't finish that thought. I'm just speaking. I don't know exactly where it's coming from. Right? But a person with awakened conscience isn't going to want to go back. And that's the second level of struggle. It takes integrity. I was saying that prior to taking the jump to letting go of the sewer, and the sewer here is our process. All the stuff we have to work out before we're ready to live, shouldn't that happen before we die? Right? Don't you think a person should live before they die? I remember when I was 13 reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead and it said, when you die, go toward the right light, white light. I said, okay, that's easy. I'll do it. You're just going to keep doing what you've been doing. Whatever you've been doing up to that moment, everyone thinks, oh yes, I'll go toward the white light. Forget it. A mature person would want to say, look at every way they're not doing that right now. The white light's just a metaphor for not being in the sewer. Look at all the ways they're not doing it right now and take responsibility for them. So now the person's out of the sewer, and the next level of struggle is to take the first step into the unknown. You turn your back to the sewer, you say, I'm never going back. I'm willing to sacrifice my own fears and desires, my own cynicism, and my own self-centeredness for the sake of my family, my patients, my nation, the planet, the impulse that is putting us here, the God impulse, that which puts me here for consciousness, for the sake of the development of consciousness itself. My friends, as practitioners of medicine, we need to become the kind of people who have so much integrity that our patients feel its gravitational pull without us saying a word, without us putting a needle in, without administering an herb. Everything else comes from that. You want to argue over what a line in the Shang Han Lun meant? You want to talk about learning Chinese? You want to talk about needle technique? The first thing is who we are as human beings, and the most important virtue is integrity. That's the most, we have to be whole. How whole? Well, whole is whole and it's evolving. It's going to go on forever. But we need to be the kind of human beings as practitioners that in our presence other human beings experience the felt sense of the living possibility to go further themselves right now. And I thought that Lillian pointed to this yesterday when she said that emotions are transferable, right? Didn't she say that? Well, you know, sure, I mean, they are if you're not awake. I think what she was pointing to, I'd love to talk to her about it, I think what she was pointing to is consciousness is transferable, right? So if a person's really coming from ego, it can trigger ego in you. That doesn't mean you have to pay attention to it. And if a person's coming from a higher place, you can feel inspired. We need to be the kind of people who have so much integrity, who care so much. We need to care more about our patient's integrity than we care about being liked, and even more about their integrity than we care about earning a living. And I think you'll find that if you care more about somebody's integrity than you care about your marriage or your friendship or your career, that there's going to be a price to pay. But the greatest way to show that you care about someone else's integrity is to ceaselessly strive toward more integrity ourselves. Nothing could be more important. And integrity means being one, not two. Being one, not two. Being one, not two. That means that we're going to let go of this grand illusion that we can channel some kind of cosmic energy, even though our lives are a mess. You're not going to channel anything to anybody any purer than your own intention and integrity in following up on it. There's no energy out there, there's no God out there, there's no force out there that has any greater power to come into this world and change things than the price you're willing to pay for integrity, sincerity, honesty, wisdom, any of the virtues. But those virtues don't come free, there's a price to pay. And that price is our own self-concern. Now, from my point of view, the NCCAOM exam is a test of your knowledge of medical anthropology. It has absolutely nothing to do with the meaningful practice of Chinese medicine in the 21st century. It doesn't even have to do with what Chinese medicine was in the West in the 1970s. If I was administering the exam, if I was deciding who gets to practice and who doesn't, one of the main qualifications would be, has this person arrived a state in their own development based on their conviction in the highest they've seen and striving to live up to it, that they're willing to renounce their right to take any more time for their own healing? Now, that doesn't mean if you're diabetic or if you have a herniated disc, that you don't get medical treatment. I'm talking about getting over our wounds, our traumas. Some of us have experienced real traumas. I'm sure there are things that have happened to people in this room far in excess of any of the relatively insignificant things I've ever experienced in my life. And I'm sorry for that. But the truth is that as significant as any past wound and any past trauma has been, it's insignificant compared to the potential of that human being the moment they renounce it and are freed from it. It's insignificant. So as significant as any past wound or trauma has been to anyone in this room, it's insignificant compared to their potential to spread goodness on this planet, to be a vehicle for the emergence of heaven on earth, to create greater integrity in themselves and everybody else around them in their lives. Acupuncturists are in powerful positions. There couldn't be a higher calling than to be in a clinical practice, because through clinical practice you have access to consciousness itself. There couldn't be a higher and greater responsibility. There couldn't be a higher calling. But it's important that we really move beyond the emotional. What has enlightenment meant in that last 30 years? It's meant feeling good. Feeling good. Enlightenment has nothing to do with feeling good, Mike. Go ask Jesus Christ how it felt. Go ask it. Didn't Buddha like choke to death on a piece of pork or something? A lot of the saints paid a price. RFK, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, 28 years in solitary confinement. How do you think he felt? It's all a question of free will, free choice, and the greatest choice that we have is on what part of our experience we put our attention. There's an explosion going on. It's been going for 15 billion years. We're the leading edge of that explosion, the highest potential emergence of that explosion. Now, Lao Tzu said, you can't talk about any of this. Well, we're still talking about his book 2,000 years later. He did a pretty good job. And even though maybe words aren't going to have exact fidelity to it, exact fidelity, don't you think by the time a person has a couple of graduate degrees that they ought to at least try and strive to communicate their deepest and highest experience and articulate it? So, from the perspective of the one, what does that really mean to look at? You know, we have this five element chart, right? Five elements, 60 points in a circle. I've been told I have 10 minutes left. Five elements, 60 points in a circle. The five element circle, is Maxwell Smart in the room? Is that somebody's shoe phone ringing? I'm giving this lecture and loving it. What are we going to do when people have these transponders that let people are going to be beaming up and beaming down while I'm talking? I'm going to be looking at someone and they're going to go poof, and then they're going to show up in the seat next to them. I mean, come on, people. So this afternoon we're going to talk about the heart-kidney axis, what spiritual liberation is in the context of Chinese medicine, what it means now in the 21st century, what role... You can't liberate anyone with Chinese medicine, folks. You can't do it. You can't do it. God can't liberate anyone. God can't liberate anyone. God is impotent to liberate a human being. Okay, we have plenty of proof of that. What it takes is a human choice. Okay? It takes a human choice. And when a human being makes a choice, all the light in the world is there. It's mind-blowing. It's so mind-blowing and so positive that it's a challenge to every relevant part, every relative part of ourselves, every part that's addicted to the sewer. Okay? But in practical terms, non-duality just means I mean it. That's all it means. I mean it. That's all it means. So we all have a self-image of being very loving people committed to peace with all these higher ideals. But we're all divided in our motivation. If you have the finest champagne in the world and you have sewage, and you take a teaspoonful of the champagne and put it in the sewage, you have sewage. And if you put a teaspoonful of the sewage in the champagne, you have sewage. Non-duality means this is who I am, forget the sewer, I mean it. And I'll pay any price, to never go back. And when we're looking at our patients and we're looking at clinical practice from this perspective, there's a potential for raising the values of humanity. All the survival challenges that face us today, my friends, are made by human beings. God isn't doing it to us anymore. Species extinction, God didn't do it. Polluting all the corn on the planet with genetically modified seeds, God didn't do that. The worldwide financial crisis, God didn't do that. Polluting the oceans are dying, God didn't do that. We did it. All the survival challenges that have faced us since the mid-1800s are a matter of human choice. Choices are based on values. And enlightenment means waking up to a value system far beyond our own emotional states and the contents of our own minds. I'm going to take a few questions, but what I'd like to do is just make a couple of announcements, being, you know, the entrepreneur that I am. I have a new website. It's free, so I couldn't be that great of an entrepreneur. It's called nourishingdestiny.com. Should be easy to remember. It's a catchy name. nourishingdestiny.com. And it's absolute cutting-edge web technology. It's an online community like Facebook, but just for practitioners of CM. Audio, video, it's approved by NCCAOM for continuing education classes. I will have the brightest, most forward-thinking people in the field giving classes on it, doing conference calls, and really engaging. We have to create the future of Chinese medicine. Forget its past. Forget what they're doing in China now, unless you're interested in some technical level of research. It's up to us to create the future of the medicine. Okay? So what does it mean on the one hand to be humble? Which I could barely tell you about, but I'm doing a little better. What does it mean on the one hand to be humble, and on the other hand to take absolute full responsibility for an incarnation? For who and what we are as the leading edge of perhaps matter in the universe as far as we know. I tried talking about this with a dolphin, but it just kept going, meow. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Steve's Kelly, San Diego, acupuncturist. Who is the one that is doing the caring, and who is the one that is having to pay the price to help to allow the integrity transform the patient?
So the question is, who is the one who's doing the caring, and who is the one who has to pay the price? Well, as practitioners, we have to pay a price. The simple rule, look, people think, I literally know, because I used to think, when I step into my treatment room, I'm one way, and that my treatment room is my altar. And then I'm a complete effing mess everywhere else. But when I go into my treatment, forget it. You're only going to be the same way. Every time you put in a needle, you're going to be transmitting hypocrisy to your patient. You're only going to continue to do. There's no cosmic force out there. There's no cosmic light out there. There's no God. There's nothing out there independent of the choice that you're making and the price you're paying for your own integrity. That's it. Integrity means there's no place in your life you would care if anybody else looked. No hard drive, no desk drawer they shouldn't open. That's not too high a standard for people holding themselves out as healers. It really isn't. So we have to pay a price. It's going to be impossible to ask anybody. Look, patients come to us saying they want something, right? They want something. Have you ever found out that when you try to help a person get what they say it is they really want, you better watch out? There's a price to pay. One of the prices is you have to have so much respect for the dignity and integrity of your own patients. You have to be willing to know what they know and when they know it, and then hold them to it. And you can only hold somebody to the highest they're evidencing in your presence to the degree you're willing to hold yourself and be held by others to the highest that you've seen. Most of us don't want to admit to ourselves, let alone anyone else, what we actually know is true, because then we might have an obligation to be held to it. I took a class recently. I was told when I talk, I shouldn't shake my head. You know how I got this? I studied with Leon Hammer 10 years. Leon Tossinger. I didn't used to do it. Anyway, you know, I'm proud to be in that tradition. So, any other questions? Yes, sir.
Who's Leon?
Who's the what?
Who's Leon?
Who's Leon? Leon Hammer. Google. Yeah. Come on. Well, someone else. Yes, sir, in the back. Have I come across today as being uncompassionate? No, I know. So, I got it. So the question is, how do you help people get over their own traumas without coming across as not being compassionate? Right. I don't do anything different in the treatment room than I did here this morning. I'm not one way somewhere and another way somewhere else. So have I been uncompassionate this morning? So if many of us have been through great traumas. Now the truth is, when a person comes into your office, it's very rare that they haven't dealt with that trauma with 30 or 40 other healthcare professionals, especially out here in California. But it's fair game, isn't it, to look at a person the first time and say with love in your heart and absolute conviction, I'm so sorry that happened to you. Or I'm so sorry you have to go through this. But after you've said that and meant it, let's go forward. Right? We've got a whole universe waiting. Okay? Now, I'm unwavering this and I have absolute conviction. The highest purpose of healing is to bring heaven to earth. It doesn't take time. The greatest way to give transmission is to be so clear in your own self that you've renounced your own wounds and traumas. It doesn't mean that I don't feel pain over things that have happened to me in my life. I just don't care. I just don't care. My eyes are on something else. There is something shining and so glorious available right now with no excuses. All it takes is to move one inch toward it. All it takes is sincerely to take one step toward it. And the gates of heaven open. So we have to drop this new age, it's all about me, feel good mentality. We've got a new president, a new administration. It's not going to come to anything if we're not out there every day doing the field work for the change that needs to happen on this planet. This election was a referendum on the move from nation-centric consciousness to world-centrism. Okay? World-centrism is good. God-centrism is better. The next step would be cosmocentrism, right? World-centrism, cosmocentrism. Cosmocentrism means the one. You can call it God, you can call it the Tao, call it whatever you want to call it. But the bottom line is what it means is having integrity. And there can be no one when we're not having integrity. We're the healers, Integrity is the greatest virtue we can embrace. Everyone here knows one thing they could change in their life. That if they changed it, it would be of benefit to everyone in their lives. Everyone. Everyone in here knows there's one thing that for years they know they should do and they haven't done it because they're waiting. They need more time first to heal. You just drop it. Okay? It is now time for the break. I hope to see some of you this afternoon. My books are on sale at the Golden Flower Chinese Herb booth. I will be there right after my lecture this afternoon to sign them. I have heard they are good books. Gotcha. Okay, lots of love, folks. Thank you.